Good to be back with you again this afternoon. We're glad that you're here. Glad to have those that are visiting with us. I do want to mention to you that October 19th through 23rd, I've been asked to do a meeting in Anniston. I think it's called the Golden Springs Congregation there. And I don't have my lessons picked out yet. And if you know of something that I did that you think would be a good meeting lesson, let me know. If there was something that was really terrible that I shouldn't do, you can tell me that too. But I'll be working on that in the upcoming weeks, but wanted to see if you had any thoughts about that. I certainly would appreciate it. Tonight I want to talk about the hypocrisy controversy, and not like it's really a controversy, but hypocrisy is something that we certainly need to avoid. And one word that comes into mind when we talk about hypocrites is the word Pharisee. Now, you know, there were a lot of hypocrites that were Pharisees, and a lot of Pharisees that were hypocrites, and the words are not interchangeable. But when you look at the New Testament, certainly, you know, those two words were linked together quite a bit. And so, you know, today, when people think about the word Pharisee or Pharisaical, they kind of link that together with being a hypocrite. And a lot of that comes from Jesus' ongoing confrontation with the Pharisees and his words of reproof toward them, because many times the occurrences were spoken by Jesus 22 different times in the New Testament, the New King James Version. 15 of those occurrences were the word hypocrite was being used. It was in a direct response to the Pharisees. So he addressed the scribes and Pharisees as hypocrites, you know, 7 different times in Matthew chapter 23. And so that is something that seriously needs to be considered. You know, when Jesus condemns an action or condemns some state of mind and state of heart, it's something that we need to explore and make sure that whatever it was that they were doing that Jesus was not happy with, that we're not falling into that same trap. So we want to talk a little bit this afternoon, about what is a hypocrite and how we can avoid that in our life. So to know what a hypocrite is certainly will help us. It might be one of those things that you think that you know one when you see one. And when we see something that's not genuine, somebody that is not genuine, we think maybe we can notice that. And we appreciate things that are genuine. And when people are described as being, that is a real genuine person, you know, that's a compliment. And usually it is. It may mean that they speak their mind a lot too, and sometimes maybe not, maybe shouldn't. But a person that is something on the outside that they're not really on the inside, that's not something that people do appreciate. Nobody really defends hypocrites. Hypocrisy is something that most people are against. So what is the definition? Well, Nelson's Bible Dictionary says that a hypocrite is, in the Greek theater, one who wore a mask and played the part on a stage, imitating speech and mannerisms and conduct of the character portrayed. The word that Matthew uses for hypocrite is hypocrites, and that is the same word that Nelson's Bible Dictionary is talking about. It's meaning somebody that is an assumed character, a stage actor, a stage player, and, you know, one who answers or plays a part. And, you know, Greek and Roman actors many times spoke while wearing large masks, and the mask sometimes would augment the force of their voice. And that word became common to be used to describe an actor or one that plays a part in a play. And so if we were ancient Greeks, we might say there are a lot of hypocrites in Hollywood. You know, so, and that's true in many different ways, I suppose. But Unger's Bible Dictionary says that a hypocrite is a double person, a person that is both natural and artificial. The first he keeps to himself, and the other he puts on as he does his clothes to make his appearance before men. And so we see the history of the word there, and the history is that of a stage actor. And certainly you can see how that really helps us to understand where the word came from and how we use it today, and how it really fits in with what we think of when we think about hypocrisy, that things are really all a show, that things are not what they appear to be. And so, what are Jesus' objections of hypocrisy? The Lord exposes several different elements of hypocrisy that are opposed to being genuinely godly. And these really are the heart of the matter. Hypocrisy is something that is based on pride. It's focused on others more than God. In Matthew chapter 23 and verse 5, Matthew chapter 23 verse 5 talks about those that are hypocrites. They do their works that they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the best places at the feast, the best places in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called by men, Rabbi, Rabbi. But you do not be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. And do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ. But he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Many times we see those that are in leadership positions, and we want to know, will they do what they ask others to do? Or are they hypocritical? Just this past week, I was at a conference in Orlando, and before you think I had a great time, I never got to go to Disney World. I could see the fireworks out the window, and I was that close to being beamed aboard the mothership, and could not go to Disney World. I was working the whole time. But one of the things that was done while I was there, and a lot of you have heard about the ice bucket challenge for Lou Gehrig's disease, and I know Rex has done it, and some other people have done it, and it has amazed me that as many people as I have known that have done it, nobody has challenged me to do it. And I'm not asking to be challenged, because I'll tell you the rest of the story. But they decided in Konica Minolta that they were going to have the largest ice bucket challenge, you know, ever, and had 250 people. And Lowe's donated the buckets, and the hotel donated the ice. And so we all got up at 5:45 in the morning, because it was going to be filmed and maybe put on Fox News. And so I get down there, and I'm ready. I've got my towel, and the director of production print for Konica Minolta was down there telling everybody to get lined up. And I was thinking, you know, I wonder if she's going to get wet. You know, I wonder if, you know, she's really making it. You know, we were told in an email that this is voluntary, but we really expect to see you there. You know, so, that didn't sound too voluntary to me. So I got up and I wondered, you know, here is our leader. What's she going to do? And, you know, is she going to get wet? Well, she did. She got up there and she got doused. And the funny thing is that I kind of escaped without getting very wet. But I wrapped my towel around me so that people wouldn't notice that I didn't get very wet. But that night I got called down to a meeting of my peers. And it sounded kind of fishy. And so somebody ratted me out and I got doused at the end of the day, that Randy did not get wet enough. But the point of that story that got a little off track is that here is somebody, is she going to be a hypocrite or not? Is she going to do what she's telling everybody else to do? Well, she did. She did what she told everybody else to do. But a hypocrite is focused on outward appearances, and they're focused on what they look like to others more than they look like to God. And that's what is said in Matthew chapter 23 about these Pharisees and these ones that want to be called teacher. You know, that we could liken it today to people that want to make sure that they have all the letters on their business card after their name. You know, we got a customer that is talking about that very thing. How much room do we have on our business card? Because there's people that want to have all these certifications and all these titles, and you can get it all on there in 5-point type. But they're concerned about letting everybody know what they're certified to do. Don't be called rabbi, for one is your teacher. Don't be concerned about what it is that you're called. Don't be concerned about, you know, the name that's on your business card. But here we see something specifically pointed out that these men were doing. It says that they make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. Well, what was this? Well, what was being referred to here was found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 8 and 9. And the people of Israel were being instructed here, to remember the words of God, the words that had been passed down to them by Moses and other leaders. They didn't have it written down like we do, so the word was going to be passed on through word of mouth. And you're going to teach it to your children, you're going to teach it to your grandchildren, and you've got to have these words close to your heart. You've got to have these words in your heart. Well, that didn't mean that they needed to write them on their chest, close to their heart. It meant that it needed to be part of them and needed to be in their mind. But they took that literally. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 8 and 9, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." Okay, well, the Word of God needs to be as frontlets between my eyes. So what am I going to do about that? Well, I'm going to put some scriptures on a little piece of paper and attach it to my head so it can be like a frontlet between my eyes. And that's what they did. There's a phylactery sitting right on top of his head. And so this is something that is repeated several times in the Old Testament. And, there's never any indication that the Israelites of the Old Testament took this any way except for figuratively the way it was intended, that they were to take the Word of God and they were to meditate on it. They were to pass it down to their kids and their grandkids. There's not any indication in the Old Testament that, oh, well, we need to write it down and make some kind of device to strap to our head. But that's what the Pharisees of Jesus' day were doing. They literalized the command and wore these small leather boxes on their forearms and their foreheads, and known as phylacteries, and it contained, the three passages that this was recorded, where this was recorded. And so these were worn as symbols of faithfulness to God's law. And they would make the phylacteries very large. Not because they needed the large print edition and couldn't see it, but because they wanted people to see what it was that they were doing. They made their phylacteries large. And they wore these tassels on their garments that were very large. So it was seen as a symbol of faithfulness to God's law. Make it large so that everybody could see them. And more of a modern picture here of what Jews would do is that you see the phylacteries are attached to the arm and to the forehead, and really doesn't serve any practical purpose because you can't see what's up there anyway, but everybody else can see it. But what they did is they made this a command and wore larger ones than everybody else to be seen by all. So spirituality was something that was defined outwardly. And this is what Jesus was condemning. In Matthew chapter 6, "Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them, otherwise you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets, that they have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly." That's probably a very hard thing for some of us to do, is when we do something good, we can't keep it to ourselves. When we do something that's charitable, when you go to a concert and you see the list of all the donors in there, I've been in the printing business a long time. If somebody's name is left out that donated, they get very upset. And you will be reprinting that because the symphony will call you and say, "We left out some donors and we've got to put that in." Or you get to the concert and there's another piece of paper that's been slipped in that, "Oh, well, we forgot to leave out this sponsor, or we forgot to leave out this, we forgot and left out this person." And so people want to be recognized for the things that they do. But Jesus is telling us that's not the way that we need to be. And when we're helping somebody else, when we're doing something that is an act of kindness towards somebody else, Randy doesn't need to speak up and say, I just want everybody to know that I helped this person, or this person needs help. And the reason I know that is because I helped them the other day, and here's what I did. And so sometimes we can find ways to stick that information in just to make sure that everybody knows that we did some kind of act of kindness. And why is that? Well, it all comes from pride. Hypocrisy is really linked to pride. It's focused on, not on others. It's focused on self. And so God had specifically instructed the Jews to care for the needy, and benevolent work was a duty that they were to take seriously. And God wanted them to protect the widows and the orphans and those who were needy. He expected His people to reflect kindness. And in Deuteronomy chapter 14, God commanded the Jews to bring tithes of their produce and store within their gates things specifically to help the poor and those who had no inheritance in the land. The Levites would have been the ones that would not have had the land because that was not given to them. So that was one to whom they were to show benevolence. Deuteronomy chapter 14 says, they may come and eat and be satisfied that the Lord your God may bless you in the work of the hand which you do. And Deuteronomy chapter 15, God warns them not to harden their heart against the poor or to shut their hand from him. You shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. But the Pharisees, you know, could take this act of kindness and turn it into something that glorifies self. And so Jesus is denouncing those that do these good deeds just so that you can be seen by somebody else. And to do things to be seen by others, you know, really robs these acts of the true spiritual value. And Jesus said the reward that they received, they've got it. They've got their reward. They've got their name on the building. They've got their name in the program, whatever it is. They have their reward because people have seen what they did. And in our context of Matthew chapter 23 tonight, these people are ones that wanted to applaud themselves. And that is their reward. Well, what does God expect? God expects more from us than that. God expects a change in the heart, not just a change in appearance, not a change in somebody wearing a leather box on their head, wearing some kind of garment, or as Jesus said, you know, some people make it look like they've been fasting. It reminds me of the, you know, Rice Krispie treat commercial a few years ago where the woman makes like, I can make Rice Krispie treats, anybody can make those, but she messed up her hair, she put flour all over her face and stuff so that she could act like, I've been slaving over these Rice Krispie treats and I just had to melt half a stick of margarine and put it in the microwave. You know, it's not that hard. But she wanted some recognition for that. And people want recognition. God says, you don't need recognition, you just need to do what I said. You need to help those that need help and don't be asking for the applause. He wants us to desire to do good. He wants a change in the heart, not just a change on the outside. If there's a change on the inside, it will show up on the outside. So God sees more than what people around us see. We can fool people, but God is not fooled. God sees our heart. You may not see my heart, but God does. Luke chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, in the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Well, why did Jesus tell them to beware of that? Well, he didn't want them to be like that. He didn't want them to be hypocrites. And he went on and said, there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light. And what you have spoken in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetop. And how would you like it if you told somebody, see, now I'm going to tell you something, I don't want you to tell anybody else. And then you get on Facebook or on the internet, they posted everything that you said. well, maybe you shouldn't have said whatever it was that you said if it wasn't supposed to be public. But what Jesus is saying is the Pharisees are good at hiding things, and they're good at being hypocrites, and they have fooled people. But he says they're not fooling God, and everything that's been whispered, everything that's in the cloak of darkness, it's going to be brought to light. And if you're not doing what's right, you know, certainly that can be a scary thing and a very sobering thing. Hypocrisy is pride, and hypocrisy is also selfishness. It is focused on self more than God. The hypocrite is not truly interested in what is true or right, or the other person that he says that he is going to be helped. That we see that kind of thing all the time. A coach may be friendly to the refs at the beginning of the game because I want the refs to be on my side. But, you know, the coaches can turn real quickly against that if it doesn't go their way. And we've probably all been in the situation where there are those that don't really have a whole lot to do with us, but when they need something, you know, when I worked at Disney World, we had what was called a main gate pass, and we could get several people in every quarter. And I don't know how everybody knew that. They just assumed that, well, if you work at Disney World, maybe you can get us in. I heard from more people that I hadn't heard from in years when I was working at Disney World. Oh, we're coming down to Disney World. Randy, do you know if there was a way that we could get discount tickets, or is there something that you have that could help us? You know, and so that was something that I didn't hear from these friends until they needed something. And we see that in the business world. The person that doesn't pay any attention, they come up to you, Randy, it's so good to see you. Sure is. And what is it that, come on, get to the point. I know you need something. So there are those that behave in that way. They focus on themselves and they are not really interested in the other person until it comes time that they need something from that person. Well, the Pharisees were in the boat of loving to be exalted, and Jesus said they love to be called teacher. And so it's easy for us to get caught into that web, and things that are really supposed to be done for the glory of God get turned back to glorify us. You know, preachers can get caught up into that, wanting compliments. And song leaders, teachers, whatever it may be, we want to be complimented. We want to receive those acts of applause, so to speak. But you know, when I read through the Bible, I don't see that God created the church with a public relations department. And we are to let our light shine before men and shine as lights in a perverse world. And then the activity of every Christian and the congregation should be focused in one direction. And that's toward God. It's not about Randy. It's not about Tom. It's not about Rex. It's not about any of us. And if I didn't mention your name, don't get upset about that. Don't be a Pharisee. And want the attention. I don't have time to mention everybody's name. You're all included. It's not about me. The first chapter of Ephesians, Paul categorizes great blessings that we have in Christ. He talks about the purpose that we have. And he talks about the purpose of God's work in our behalf. And three different times he states that it's for the praise of His grace and the praise of His glory. It's never for it's for your praise. Or the praise of the church or the local congregation is for the praise of God's glory. And this is an area in which there's not a whole lot of room for compromise. What we need to do is not desire to receive the glory of men. And when you consider, you know, the judgment of Moses at the waters of Meribah, that should really tell us how God feels about, you know, taking the focus away from God. Moses was not able to enter into the promised land because when he made the mistake there, he took the glory for himself. Now, shall we bring you water out of this rock for you rebels? When he's saying we, he's talking about himself and Aaron. He's not given glory to God. And then God said, you did not hallow me in the sight of the people. Therefore, you're not going to enter the land. Taking the focus off of God and putting it on yourself is something that God takes seriously. Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 48, then the Lord spoke to Moses that same day, saying, go up to this mountain of Abiram, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, across from Jericho. View the land of Canaan, which I give to the children of Israel as a possession, and die on the mountain which you ascend, and be gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor and was gathered to his people, because you trespassed against me among the children of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin, because you did not hallow me in the midst of the children of Israel. And that really should humble us to know that God would judge such a man as Moses on the basis of his attitude when he did not obey God. He disobeyed God in this act. We can all be vulnerable to that problem. If Paul encountered some, as we read this morning, Philippians chapter 1, there were those who preached the truth, but they didn't do it, from the standpoint of really trying to spread the word. Paul said that they did it from self-ambition, not sincerely. Now, Paul did go on to say that, whatever the case was, however the word got out there, if the word was right, he was glad that the word was preached. But he said everybody that preached didn't do it with the right motives. And certainly there are many in the religious world that do that today, and many that teach things falsely. There are those that pervert the scriptures. There are those that try to sensationalize things and twist scriptures, twist prophecies, and make it seem like, there's all these prophecies in the Old Testament. They're really pointing to what's going on today. No, the things that are prophesied in the Old Testament, as Rex has been teaching on in the Revelation class, most of those prophecies that you see in Isaiah and other places in the Old Testament have already been fulfilled, but there are people that will go to the Scripture and sensationalize it and say, this hasn't happened yet. I figured out the code. I figured out what is going to happen. And they are bringing attention to themselves, and it's all based on falsity. It's all based on lies and twisting of the Scripture. But they may sell a lot of books. And several years later, when those things that they say don't come true, it'll be just another step. That has been going on for years and years. And one of my favorite lessons that I heard my dad preach when I was young was the late great planet Earth. And it was based on Hal Lindsey's book about what was going to happen in the millennium. And I don't have time to go into it now, but it was fascinating because it was ridiculous. The things that Hal Lindsey was saying was going to happen, and he was taking specific countries and things that were going on in politics and linking that with Revelation and other things. It was just fascinating that he could be so creative. A lot of the governments that he was talking about at the time don't even exist anymore. And there's lots of things in the world that have changed. It was all falsehood. But there's no telling how many millions of dollars Hal Lindsey made off of false teaching and brought attention to himself. And so we're not to do that. And we're not to try to draw attention to ourselves. Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says not to blow a trumpet. It's okay in high school then, but not to blow a trumpet to announce what you were doing. I'm fixing to pray. Let me go out and blow the trumpet so everybody can see what it is that I'm about to do. Because I'm trying to bring attention to myself. Jesus said, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. And proverbially speaking, it means that you need to keep some things hidden. Now, would you do good if no one would know? Would you? Would you do something good if no one would know? Do you want to be seen? A lot of times people do want to be seen for the good things that they do. I'm not saying it's wrong to be recognized for those things. But it is certainly an attitude of the heart that needs to be put aside if that is our main goal, is to be seen by others. Now, I'm going to make sure that everybody knows that I donated to this cause, or I did this for this person, Hypocrisy is selfishness. Hypocrisy is also impurity of the heart. False doctrine contaminates everything that we do. And hypocrisy contaminates the attitude of the Christian. In Mark chapter 7, verses 6 and 7, he answered and said to them, "Well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites, as it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of men." So here there's a contrast between the lips and the heart. You know, the lips say the right thing, but the heart is really wrong. Obedience is not something that should just be outwardly. Others, if they judge you by your outward appearance, they really get an incomplete picture. And I know that's really all that we can see in each other. If we're not open with each other, that's really all that we can see is the outward appearance. And for some people, if they could just keep up the outward appearance, that is all that's important. And the passage that Barry read this evening, it talks about whitewashed tombs. And a tomb is full of what? It's full of dead men's bones. And it looks real pretty on the outside. And if you go to a lot of graveyards, you'll see that it looks great. One of my first years out of college, when I had first time I had an apartment on my own, I went to work at FC Camp for about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, because I was doing two camps in a row, and I decided, well, I'm going to save money by turning off all the power in my apartment. And I forgot that cold things like to stay cold in the refrigerator. And so when I got back, there was a lot more in there than what I had left, because it had started growing. But you know what? The refrigerator looked real good on the outside. If I've got a bad problem in this refrigerator, I think I'll whitewash it. I think I'll spray paint it and make it look real good. I could have done whatever I wanted to the outside of the refrigerator, wouldn't have taken care of what was wrong on the inside. Wish you all could have been there to experience it. It was not pretty and it really smelled bad. I had to take care of the inward problem. The outward wasn't the problem. But these hypocrites, these Pharisees, Jesus is saying they're all concerned about the outside, but on the inside they're just like that moldy refrigerator. They're just like the inside of that tomb. And so Jesus warned people, I don't want you to be like them. You know, if they proselyte you and they convert you, you're going to be just like them. And what are you? Well, you're good on the outside and dead on the inside. And many times today, you know, how do we determine if somebody is faithful? Well, are they attending? Well, that is important. They need to attend. So that's really an outward sign that's very easy for us to see. And so a person may be deemed, quote, faithful if he attends assemblies regularly without reference to his attitude or actions at other times, or, you know, what's going on in the heart. And I understand there's just a certain amount that we can see. But what we need to do is we need to be looking at our inside. We need to be focused not on how we appear to others, but how we appear to God. Matthew 23, verse 23, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithes of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone, blind guides who strain out the gnat and swallow a camel." So Jesus' analogy here of straining out a gnat refers to a common practice which Jarrell would be in full favor of, that you would pour water through a sieve to strain out anything that was unclean. Jarrell does not want us to drink insects. I don't either. But, you know, there may be these unclean insects that are too small for them to see with the naked eye. And so they wanted to make sure that, oh, I'm going to drink something that's pure. But Jesus said, you strain out the little things, but you swallow the camel. You know, the largest animal that probably was walking around in Palestine, they're going to swallow that one, but you're not going to swallow the gnat. And so Jesus makes these distinctions here to say, you know, you're just not really getting it. You are careful to swear by the temple and not by the gold of the temple, and you work out ways that you can lie. and not keep your vows. You've worked out this system of doing these things just to make yourself look good or feel good. But inside you're like the whitewashed tomb. We are consistently challenged to look deeper than the surface, and that's what Jesus was telling these people every time he started out saying, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." He's saying, you are concentrating on the outside and not the inside. You cleanse the inside of the cup, or you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautifully outwardly, but are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. And finally, we need to recognize that hypocrisy is something that is infectious. When one person decides to live a lie and deny his own conscience that should be based on the Word of God, it can embolden others to do the same thing. And Paul confronted Peter on this very thing in Galatians chapter 2 when Paul says, "When Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to his face, because he was to be blamed. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. When they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy." So, you see, Peter here is having a little bit of the symptoms of the same problem that he had at the cross of Jesus when he, was blending in with the crowd, in a much worse way there at the cross, denying Christ. But what he's doing here, he's really denying Christ too, because he is acting like the Jews around the Jews. "Hey, I'm one of you." And around the Gentiles, "I'm one of you." And it wasn't just Peter. It says that the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him. So Peter was a leader, and people were influenced by the leader to do the same thing. And even Barnabas was caught up in it as well. So good that Paul pointed that out. I know Peter repented of it, but this is something that we need to realize, that if we are a hypocrite, we can certainly do some damage, not only to ourselves spiritually, but to others. The hypocritical leader can do enormous spiritual damage, because if it's not taken care of, he just lowers the standard for everybody else that follows him. Just imagine what it would have been like had Paul not brought this to Peter's attention, and it continued to go on. There could have been a lot of collateral damage from that. Matthew chapter 23, verse 15 says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself." And that is very pointed. Jesus said, if you go out and you try to find somebody and make them like you, you're already lost and you're just making them just like you. If the hypocrisy is exposed, that bad influence can be reversed and be good. And that's why Jesus warned his disciples about the leadership of the Pharisees not being caught up in the leaven of the Pharisees. Matthew chapter 23, verse 2 says, "They say and do not do, for they bind heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on men's shoulders. They themselves will not move them with one of their fingers." So leaders who constantly call on others to sacrifice in the work but are unwilling to do it themselves, of course it's not effective because the work's not getting done, but they're hypocrites in that. So how can we avoid being a hypocrite? Well, our heart needs to be in what we're doing. We need to fight the tendency of playing a part rather than living by the truth. One thing that we can do is we can come to grips with what Paul says in Romans chapter 12, verse 3, "Not to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but to think soberly." We need to acknowledge that we are sinners and not think of ourselves too highly. Bill Vaughn, a syndicated columnist who's passed away, said once that in the game of life, it is a good idea to have a few early losses, which relieves you of the pressure of trying to maintain an undefeated season. You know, I guess you could say that might be what hypocrisy is often about. It's people trying to give the impression to other people that we live lives which are undefeated. And I've known so many people that have struggled with sin, and they tried to keep up appearances, but when they finally got on their knees and prayed, or they confessed it to their brethren and got help, it was like this huge weight was lifted off of their shoulders. Because they weren't trying to keep up an appearance anymore, but they were honest with themselves, they were honest with God, and they were honest with their brethren that they were sinners and that they needed some help. And that's really, you know, where we all are in front of God when we become Christians. If we truly understand where we are without Christ, we need to realize that we're sinners and that we're totally lost without His help. We cannot put on a show. We can put on a show, but the show isn't doing anything. It's not helping anything but to give appearance of something that is not really true. And we need to focus on service instead of status. If we won't overcome the tendency to live for ourselves, you know, that's going to be a hard thing to correct. Don't focus on your status. And finally, spend more time on the inside than the outside. We spend a lot of time on the outside of our lives. You know, the clothes, the hair, the makeup. And how much time do we as much time as we spend cleaning up the outside, how much do we do about the inside? Prayer, study, reflection, confession, talking to our brethren. So hypocrisy just isn't real. And Jesus expects us to be real and to be honest, because God knows what we are. If you're putting on a show, it may fool everybody in this room, it may fool everybody outside of this room, but it doesn't fool God. And the show that we're putting on does not succeed in the end. We don't need to live lives of hypocrisy. We need to live lives of honesty, because God knows our heart and He knows what we need, and we need to come to grips with that. If we can help you in any way to be obedient to the gospel of Christ, if you have not been doing what you need to do to have a home in heaven, if we can help you in any way, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.